What is up and welcome back to 24 minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I am Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are flexing our muscles and getting into some deep, dark shit as we talk about Love Lies Bleeding.
Gym manager Lou falls for Jackie, a bodybuilder who is passing through town en route to a competition in Las Vegas. This is A24's newest film. Just went nationwide this past weekend by the time this episode comes out, right? It spent a couple of weeks in New York and LA exclusively, garnered some very positive word of mouth, and now it is nationwide for everybody to watch. Of course, this movie does star Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, Dave Franco, and Ed Harris, among a few other people. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to be back doing A24 new releases. This is the first of what is potentially like an 8 or 10 week run for us here on the show.
It's kind of nuts. We have so much new stuff to go over. There's some stuff that we missed because of the Oscars. And then just things that are now coming out and going wide. Like we have a plethora. We have no shortage of new things to talk about.
Yeah.
Our apologies to the curse. Who knows if we're ever going to get back to the curse? Who knows?
I know. I will make it happen here on the show. I have to. I need to know. You haven't finished the curse. That's correct, right?
Correct.
You never. Okay. So we covered the first 5 episodes here on the show. You can go back and listen to that pod. We tackled Euphoria in a similar manner. We tackled a couple other A24 shows. We did The Idol as well, where we do the first half and then we do the second half. Of course, the Oscars got in the way of doing the curse second half. I have seen the second half and I have so many words. That is literally why I'm glad I host a podcast, so I can talk through them. Mm-hmm. So it's happening. I need to know what you think because it eats at me. So we will get there eventually, whether it's soon or whether it's later. Speaking of the curse, there is an actor in this movie who is in the curse. It all comes back to Nathan Fielder.
Look at that.
Okay. I don't think we have any housekeeping. I don't think we really have anything to talk about. I think we're just going to dive right into Love Lies Bleeding. I think we should stay spoiler free, maybe for the first 10, 15 minutes while we give our general like overview. And then maybe we can give a spoiler warning after that, because we're obviously going to be going into spoiler territory and talking about the depths of the film.
For sure. Yeah, I think we can probably do that.
Okay, sounds good. So Love Lies Bleeding premiered at Sundance 2024. So this was back in January. It is now towards the end of March that it has got a nationwide release. So we've had about a 2-month buildup to Love Lies Bleeding coming out. Initial reactions out of Sundance were very positive. Reactions out of New York and LA, like I said, very positive. Garnered some really great word of mouth as this new kind of queer horror erotic thriller that's obviously led by Kristen Stewart. A hive that she possesses is very attached to her. So it's got a lot going for it. We've both seen it. Directed by Rose Glass. Her last film was Saint Maud.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember how you felt about Saint Maud?
Roughly, very vaguely, I remember, yes. What about you? Do you remember your thoughts on it? I remember the ending. That's what I remember from Saint Maud.
Yep.
I remember feeling kind of like whatever-ish about the movie itself, but the ending sticking with me for sure.
Yeah, I remember feeling pretty similar. I believe I gave it a C24 and you gave it a D24, so you're a little bit harsher on Saint Maud. I remember being like pretty like okay on the film as a whole, like you said, and then the final probably like 3 minutes, I was just like, holy shit, that was insane.
Yeah.
Love Lies Bleeding, similar, not similar. We'll see. We're going to tackle it when we get to the spoiler section. What are your non-spoiler thoughts on Love Lies Bleeding? Because we haven't talked about this. And honestly, I texted you as soon as I saw this and I was like, all caps. I was like, so Love Lies Bleeding?
Yeah.
And then we have not discussed this at all.
We have not talked about it. One last thing about Saint Maud. Another thing I remember about it is that it is definitely better than Maestro. So
oh
I just
God,
want to make sure
Jesus.
That that is put on the record there. You're
just
but,
loading the strays machine every episode.
Gotta do it. Gotta do it. I had a good time with this movie, man. Like the trailer had me sold and it also had me worried that it wasn't going to live up to what I wanted it to be. But I think it successfully did that. I left this movie with a smile on my face. Like I definitely will be rating this higher than Saint Maud for sure. I thought the cast was, I thought everyone in the cast was great. Mm-hmm. I thought Jenna Malone was great. I thought this was like maybe Dave Franco's greatest thing he's ever done. You know what I mean? Like he's on screen for like 10 minutes, but he's fucking fantastic. He's a top tier
weirdo is what he is. And he's so good at it.
Yeah. This is what he's here for. And he did a wonderful job. Ed Harris, I'm super here for as well. I thought he was great. But really, I mean, obviously this is like the Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien show. And they were both just like, I thought they were marvelous. This is one of the best Kristen Stewart performances. Katie O'Brien, you know, I'm kind of new to. I was told she's in Quantumania. I don't remember her role, but like I guess I've seen her in that. And I think I've
she
seen her
is credited for Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. I find it concerning that neither of us remember her role in that film.
Yeah, I do
she
not,
plays like, Jen Torah, a character I'm not familiar with.
No clue. She's under prosthetics the whole time. I have no idea. So for me, I'm treating this as my first experience with Katie O'Brien, and I thought she was absolutely wonderful.
I believe she's also going to be in Twisters, the new Lee Isaac Chung movie coming out this summer, led by Glenn Powell, which will be fascinating to see her in that role.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. Like, that'll be fantastic. I think she's gonna be great. I was honestly going to say, like, I'm excited for whatever she's doing next. And I really am excited for what she's doing next because I think Twisters is going to be fun. This movie, though, it was great. I loved it. I liked the setting of it. I thought the cinematography was just, like, superb. It really gave us a good tone of where we were. I listened to some interviews with Rose Glass, and I liked that she was just like, yeah, I just didn't want to have to deal with cell phones, so I set it in the 80s. Like, that's super valid and
genius.
It makes it work just perfectly, you know, because it's like, yeah, we got a great story because of that. Period pieces, it's so weird to think of a time since I've been alive is now considered like a period piece, you know, but I guess it is technically. Granted, I was like six, but you know, it is what it is. But I loved it. But yeah, to go back to the cinematography, it's like some of these close-up shots we got of like at the very beginning of their bodies as they're working out, you know, just like these super tight macro shots.
We get a mega close-up of this guy's nipple while he's benching. And I was like, ooh, we're in for a real treat with this movie.
Yeah, for real. And I like, we totally got it. Like, and I think all their sex scenes were handled beautifully, like very artistic. And obviously they're both like beautiful people, so that didn't hurt either. And I thought it was really good. I had a good time. I kind of got lost like at the end a little bit, like it kind of went off the rails. I just felt like there's some stuff that maybe didn't need to happen or whatever, but obviously like we'll go into that later. But overall, I'm positive on this movie. I'm so glad that I saw it in the theater. I thought it was a great movie, and I don't know, what were your thoughts? I'm excited to hear what you thought about this movie.
Yeah, I think my Letterboxd review will prove this point as well, but the weightlifting puns are easy to come by because this movie fucking rips. It is a very good movie. It is a really, really good movie. I enjoyed it quite substantially. I think I enjoyed it more than I thought, and I saw it a couple days ago now. And I've been thinking about it, which I think is a good sign. Like, I've been like, oh man, that was good. I liked that movie. Like, I've been looking forward to talking about it with you, of course. I've been talking with other people about it and texting about this film. So I think the word of mouth that I had heard of, like, Love Lies Bleeding, like, really good movie, did not disappoint whatsoever. I think I agree with basically everything you said. I think the cinematography is special and of the time and does capture this really like gritty kind of lonesome vibe that we get out of this movie, even though we see Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien, Lou and Jackie, fall deeply in love with each other. There is this sense of distance that I think is portrayed very well. Obviously the movie gets pretty dark, and I think it handles that direction really well. You mentioned the sex scenes are handled very, very well, very artistically. I am personally a little surprised at what they were able to get away with and what they were able to put into this movie and fold into it. But I think it is a core construct of the film, of course. And me being such a fan of erotic thrillers and having just seen one at South by Southwest that was unfortunately quite disappointing, going into this and being like, this is it. We are living it. This is a really hot and a really thrilling movie. And to be able to hit both of those marks so well and execute on it so smartly, I think goes, you know, shows that Rose Glass knows what she's doing, mm-hmm. kind of in this zone. There's obviously a lot of spoilery parts that I want to get into. You mentioned Dave Franco. I think he's a really great weirdo, and we should talk more about him when we do the spoilers. But my viewing experience was interesting going into this movie because initially at Showtime, it was like me and one other person in this theater. And I was like, oh boy, this is going to be an interesting experience to share with one other random person. And then gradually as the trailers are going on, probably like 20 or 25 people filtered in. And I was like, wow, this is great. Like we're all showing up to see Love Lies Bleeding on a Sunday night. This is fantastic. Unfortunately, this is like one of the first slash only bummer theatrical experiences that I've had. The volume was felt quite low. I don't know if you experienced this, but like there were moments where in the film it was pretty difficult to hear, just to hear, not to perceive like what they were saying, but literally like the volume. I wish the person was just like, yo, can we just like crank the knob like a little bit to the right and turn it up? Which was interesting. And people even moved from the back of the theater towards the screen so they could hear it more. I was locked in enough to the movie where I was like, I'm not going outside to risk missing 4 minutes of this movie to tell them to turn it up. Cause what happens if I miss something that's imperative to this film? Yeah. I couldn't risk it. I just can't do that kind of stuff. So I sat with it. And even though it was a bummer experience in the theater and hard to hear, I was very locked into this movie. And, I walked away from it much like you. I was smiling. I gave a little applause at the end because I think it is so audacious and I think it is warranted what we're going to be discussing and deciphering at the end here. And I immediately thought like, ooh, I can't wait to own that. Like that's a good key for me. Where it's like, cool, I'm buying that when it comes out. Like I can't wait to rewatch that in my house. I think that's a good sign. Kristen Stewart, excellent in this film. My Lord. So excellent in this film.
She did a marvelous job. Yeah. I thought she was perfect. I mean, even when we're first meeting her, just like elbow deep in that fucking toilet, which is just
dude,
like,
wow.
So gnarly. But yeah, I think she did a wonderful job. I think people can be hard on her for her acting sometimes, but I loved her and Katie O'Brien was great. We were lucky enough, actually, that my partner and I, we were the only people in the theater. It was just the two of us.
Oh, a little so private screening.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bummer in the big picture of like it's that more people weren't there to watch that movie. But it was also nice. It was just literally the two of us. And like, we could almost be like we were at home and just like, holy shit, did you see that? You know, we could kind of talk to each other a little bit.
I think that's fascinating market wise, obviously, because you are in Salt Lake City and I am in Portland.
Yeah.
There is quite a substantial, prominent queer community here in Portland. So it seems like people really turned out for this movie here in this city. I'm curious nationwide. Obviously, that shakes out differently for different cities. I do think in this case, and I know we kind of gripe about it here on the show sometimes, the rollout from A24 and the distribution of this movie going to LA, New York, out of Sundance for like a week and a half or 2 weeks and only letting people exclusively see it some of the time and then rolling out to bigger cities, I think works well in this type of a situation. A very small, compact, interesting movie that is queer led and queer focused. That's a true like two-hander erotic thriller. Like I feel like that's niche enough to where it's like we should build some word and get it out. It seems like a successful distribution tactic, at least for this film.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's, you know, plenty of demographics that they could be hitting towards. I think where I'm at, you know, in Salt Lake City proper, it is definitely more liberal leaning. So I'm hopeful that the later screenings and other screenings have had people. A coworker actually approached me today because he knows about the podcast and he's like, hey, I went and saw Love Lies Bleeding this weekend. I was like,
hell fucking yeah, that brother.
That is awesome. I'm super happy to hear that. And I mean, he's got great taste. If you're listening,
oh, of course,
happens to be named Ben as well. Ben, what's up?
Are we sure this is not you just gaslighting
this
yourself?
This isn't like
you
Sophie's
positive?
Other Twitter handle where she also is named Sophie.
She's Sophie like, wow, you were so great on that movie draft podcast. It's like, yeah, I know. It's so
yeah,
good.
I know. Thank you, myself. Yeah, so I'm hopeful that it's like getting a good reception, but A24, man, it can be really frustrating, their rollout process.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Here's my last distribution question for you. Because I said I am excited to own this movie. Of course, it's only been out nationwide for 1 week here. We don't know, as of time of recording, we don't really know how it's doing at the box office. At least I didn't check. There's nothing like crazy substantial to report on that front. When do you think A24 comes out with a physical? When do you think they put it on VOD? Because they have already released, much like they did with Talk to Me, before the movie went nationwide, they released a capsule of online ceramics, A24 t-shirts, sweatshirts. There was a couple, you know, towels and things that were Love Lies Bleeding themed. Personally, always hard to invest $60 into a t-shirt when I haven't even seen the film. But people ate them up. And now that I've seen the movie, I was like, damn, should have bought one. But A24 is obviously hyped on this movie as well. Mm-hmm. So I would assume they're going to use the momentum and drop it on VOD in like 2 weeks. I don't know.
I mean, honestly, that's probably the unfortunate truth, you know, like still capitalize on this, the actual television commercials that are out there, and then just get it to the streaming soon. But that's kind of a bummer because I wish it had a longer shelf life in the theaters. But I'm with you on the online ceramic stuff, man. Like, it gets so frustrating. They release it before anyone's seen the movie. It's like, I don't know if I'm going to want this, you know, like if this movie sucks, like I don't necessarily want Ed Harris on my chest. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how I'm going to now. Obviously, I wish I had it because it would have been fantastic.
I want it so bad.
I'm still crossing my fingers that they put out some of those like the gym shirts, you know, that like that she worked
that
at.
That would be good. Yeah.
That's going to be pretty sweet to see. And I don't know, it kind of felt like that's something they could do, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Can we talk about Ed Harris's wig for a moment? Because
is that a wig?
Is it a wig?
Who knows? I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
Maybe he grew it out. You never know.
That would be fucking commitment if he did. If he did grow it out, I would also be concerned because that's like literally the scariest haircut anybody could possess.
So bad,
like it's terrible, and it like. It just reminds me of like a skeleton that like happens to have a head of hair.
Yeah. It's like that skeleton from is it Tales of the Crypt or something like that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm thinking of. Like so deathly scary, but he pulls it off pretty good, I will admit.
Yeah, he was all about it. I think it fit the character perfectly. It's kind of gnarly looking for sure, but it fits that character to a T. And I thought Ed Harris was amazing. I thought he did a really good job here.
I agree. I thought it was really good. I think everybody we talked about, the kind of the four big ones here, everybody fully bought into this movie, which is special. I know that kind of sounds lame because like, of course people are going to buy into a movie, like they're acting in a movie.
Yeah.
But it's like, we all just saw Madam Web, right? So like, we know what can happen. And especially for something like this, when you get a core group of people that do believe in Rose Glass, do believe in the project that they're putting out, it's noticeable. And I think especially when somebody is wearing a wig like that, it goes a long way to be invested. Is this a top five all-time smoking movie?
Ooh, it might be. There's a lot going on here. but I also enjoy the fact that like there are scenes where she's like legit smoking while listening to a self-help tape on how to stop smoking.
So genius.
I thought that was so good. I loved that. So I mean, in my brain isn't like functioning on all the smoking movies I've seen, but like, I would not be mad if this was in the top for sure.
Yeah. I think Kristen Stewart knows how to smoke on screen. And I think there are a small handful of actors that really do. And she is undoubtedly one of them. I know this movie just came out, but like, I think it is a top five smoking movie of all time. That would be a good power rankings. That would make a good movie draft podcast episode. Best smoking movies of all time. There you go.
What about Maestro?
pretty fucking good. Actually.
He's smoking in every single scene, dude. Yeah.
Every scene. I mean, when that movie opens, it's just one big old cigarette and a big honker. That's all we're seeing on screen.
That's it.
That's all we need to know.
Do you remember that on the same day I saw Maestro and Madam Web and gave them both 2 stars and how mad you were about that?
I'm still mad about that.
I love it so much.
I woke up at 4 a.m. last night. I couldn't go back to bed for like 45 minutes, and that was the reason why. Because I was like, God, this fucking guy.
Two stars for both of them.
Madness. Okay. Is there anything else that you want to talk about broadly before we go into true cinema and before we spoil Love Lies Bleeding?
Just if you're listening to this and wondering if you should see it, I think.
Yeah, good call out.
I think you should go see it in the theater because there are some visuals in here that hit so much literally bigger, you know, on that big screen. I think it will still play well at home if you want to wait for VOD, but I think we're both pretty big proponents here. And I imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you're a big proponent too of seeing movies in theaters. And I would write, even if it's a matinee, you know what I mean? Like just go do that. But it's, for me, it was worth seeing it in the theater.
I agree. I agree. And I agree from the standpoint of kind of what I mentioned earlier, like this is a very niche two-hander erotic thriller, you know, broadly movie that we just don't get a lot of anymore. Like the very mid, like small budget film from a filmmaker who hasn't made a lot of things that is kind of leading this redefining path for A24. Obviously, we're getting, I saw the TV Glow from Joan Schoenberg. That is a queer-focused horror film. And we're kind of like diving into this new era and seeing it theatrically supports that vision and that goal and that era of like, we want more of these things because we do want more of these things. I at least want more of these projects. I know you feel similarly.
Sure.
And so getting that support in a theatrical setting is important indeed. And I think you don't want to, I'll just say you don't want to miss out on the opportunity to see Kristen Stewart on the big screen in this movie specifically for the violent acts and for the sexy acts. I think it all works on the big screen.
It really does. There's one in particular that took place in the bathroom that I was just like,
yes,
God, like, damn, whoa, dude, damn. Like this is happening right now. This is crazy.
I literally said the same.
The big screen. Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, we're doing this. It was epic. It was great. Go. Okay. Let's do it. Okay. This is the spoiler warning. For Love Lies Bleeding. We're going to dive into it. We're going to go full spoiler territory. We're going to kick it off pretty early because there is some stuff that happens pretty early on in the movie that defines the direction of the rest of the film. Okay, the first bullet point I have here is Jackie, who, of course, is played by Katie O'Brien, is kind of the bodybuilder that's moving through town trying to get to Las Vegas to be in a show. She is fucking JJ, who is Dave Franco's character. I found this introduction to both of these characters truly hysterical because the first time you see either of these people is Dave Franco just trying his hardest to make this exceptionally awkward and transactional situation appear like the greatest thing in the world. So that way Jackie can get a job at his gun range.
Yeah.
Whole situation hilarious to me.
I mean, it was quite the eye-catching moment to kick this movie off with. It's like, wow, this is just like happening right now. But the minute he finishes, rolls over and rolls down the window and just like flings his condom at the window, like, okay, so oh my God. Like it was hilarious. Like,
you're
just the
piece
whole mannerism.
Of shit, dude. Wow,
yeah,
cool.
It's like, yep, I'm we don't know yet, but it's like, yeah, I'm cheating on my wife and I'm littering. Like I am just a douchebag. So
Those are cardinal sins in that order. It's like cheating on your wife and then littering. That's one how you go two. To the 7 rounds of hell.
Yeah, 1A, 1B right there.
Yeah, really.
Kind of, it was really interesting then just like getting the card and then just like, be careful out there. See ya. And then just like bouncing on her. It's like, oh shit. Okay. Great introduction to these characters though.
Yeah, definitely. Soon after this, I didn't really write it down as a bullet point cause it's such a small little nugget, but soon after this, we see that Jackie has slept under a bridge essentially, or really close to under a bridge. She's homeless. She's kind of floating through this town and she starts working out. She starts doing push-ups and pull-ups and brushing her teeth while doing these things, out in the hot sun in the desert and under a bridge. And I think it was a perfect tone setter for like her character, but also the energy of the film. Cause it was just like, Jesus Christ. Like, yeah. She is ripped, and like we are diving headfirst into this world that's going to get really dark and pretty messed up. But like, I could never do that. And I found that really fascinating. And like you mentioned with the cinematography, like we get this incredible macro shots of like people's veins. We get it all through the movie of Jackie's veins, mm-hmm. Which I like, I don't want to say too much more on that because I kind of want to save like the ending for the end. But she kind of like hulks out sometimes.
Yeah.
And the sound design is really neat.
It's so good. Yeah. The like the muscle fibers, like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's so well done. This is also a good continuation of the introduction of this character, just like her commitment to staying in shape and working out. Like, even if she's like literally under a bridge, she will find a way to like maintain herself.
Yeah.
I thought that was just super interesting.
I was like, damn, I don't care about my body at all because I don't do any of these. Like, I'm not that motivated.
Can you imagine sleeping on the concrete like that? Like, just, oh my God. Ugh. And then just
and then
up,
working
like,
up and
workout.
Being like, yo, let me do 1,000 pushups.
Crazy.
Okay, next one here. Jackie and Lou meeting. Lou, of course, played by Kristen Stewart. They meet when Jackie goes to the gym. A real kind of meet cute moment because Lou is like overcome with this attraction to Jackie, mm-hmm. and is staring at her and ignoring other customers. And it's really quite funny. The introduction to kind of these characters and relationships, they meet, they have sex in the gym, and then we get the introduction of muscle enhancers. Lou gives some muscle enhancers to Jackie. And this for me was the first moment where the humor and the kind of sexy erotic thriller nature of it really combined to then go down that more erotic thriller path. But this is where Lou offers to give some of this and inject some of this into Jackie. And Lou asks her, where do you want it? And Jackie's like, in the butt. And then she just puts the syringe in her butt. And I thought it was hysterical. I was the only person like laughing. So I was laughing quietly, but I think that self-awareness of the script and the characters and this kind of like very electric queer love story, it all meshes together exceptionally well.
Yeah, it's so good. I think if I remember correctly, this is also the scene where, like you said, Lou is watching Jackie at the gym, just can't take her eyes off her, and then Jackie starts talking to some guys. And Lou just like gets up like, we're closed, and turns off the lights, you know, just like makes everybody leave, you know.
Yeah, like, and the guys are like, we're working out. And she's like, fuck off, we're closed.
Fuck off, it's so good. I that really got me. I mean, the Franco thing got me with this too. It's like, oh, this is actually like kind of funny, some of this stuff.
And that is really an energy that only Kristen Stewart can pull off. Mm-hmm. And if you think about somebody else in that role, it just doesn't work because Kristen Stewart has that like grit and that hard edge to her where she can make that happen. And I know we'll talk about her a little bit more later in the pod, but like similarly to Crimes of the Future, I felt Love Lies Bleeding has this kind of Cronenbergian like blood to it that is pulsing through the film. And of course, Crimes of the Future is a David Cronenberg film, and she is so offbeat and wry in that movie in a way that only she could be. So I think she continues to establish herself as like a sole person that can only do what she does.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. There's a few line deliveries in here. It's like, oh yeah, that's she crushed
it.
And that's like because of who she is. So, I thought this was a funny intro to the Lou character, and you know her feelings about Jackie becoming pretty apparent. Then we get a little bit of Jackie's violent side as well. You know, when she kind of gets hit on too far of an extent, you know, by some of the muscle dudes outside. So yeah, I think again, just like really getting to know these people and what they're willing to do and who they are. So this was a great setup.
Did you buy the kind of passion behind Jackie and Lou as we're going through the film? Like, did you buy that relationship and that true like falling in love aspect for them?
I did, in the sense that like I can't imagine how accepting the community of some small New Mexico town in 1989 was about queer people. So when two are able to find each other, I feel like you're able to make that bond. You know, there's something even deeper there where it's like, oh, great, I found someone that I connect with, that I share this with. So I feel like you're able to create that love, and even on a, I don't know, exaggerated level, or just like a enhanced level. So it seemed quick to some extent, but then like taking a step back and thinking about it, I was like, yeah, these people probably had a lot of shared trauma, shared whatever, that they now found each other. So
I feel identical to you, and I didn't before you started speaking. So congratulations. You have changed my mind for the better.
Did it.
Cause I was a little apprehensive. I was like, I just don't know. Like it feels quick. It feels a little bit rushed. Cause next on the list, the next two bullet points, like we get into some pretty hardcore, like this is an end of first act bullet point here, where it's like, now we're on a trajectory for the rest of the film. So I had a hard time buying that, but I think you brought up good points of the exaggerated nature of their relationship. This film, much like we just said, is exaggerated. And the ending, if you've seen it, you know, is exaggerated as well. The visuals, the sound design, the muscles popping, the bulking, the veins, like all of that is this hyper exaggerated kind of aspect of the film. And then you bring up a good point of like the period piece of it. And if we think about Lou, what we know about her dad and her family and what we find out along the way, and what did or did not or might have happened to her mother, and obviously her own personality, it does feel like she's been waiting her whole life for someone like this to step in.
Yeah.
And it has finally opened the door, and she's taking full advantage of that. She is going right to the tip-top levels of how she can express her love, both physically and through protecting and sacrifice and these other things that she does for Jackie. So I think the more that I think about it, the more that I do buy in. I'd be really curious when I watch it again to see how I feel about that. Okay, next on the list, Dinner Out with JJ and Beth. JJ is Dave Franco's character, and he is married to Beth. Beth is Lou's sister, I believe. And of course, Jackie comes out to dinner with Lou as well. And Beth spills some guac or something on JJ's pants. And again, elite Dave Franco just busting out the like, you can't just rub that off my dick in the middle of a restaurant, Beth. And goes to the bathroom. Lou confronts him, basically says, look, if you're going to abuse Beth one more time, you're not going to like the circumstances, the consequences. He doesn't buy it at all.
Yeah.
This scene, I think, is the biggest eye opener into the dynamics of what we're working with, and really the tension and the tone of the darkness that is surrounding this very, very magnetic love at the center.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I think this is also where we learn all the connections that these characters have, because we know that Dave Franco works for Ed Harris, who is Kristen Stewart's dad. So we get that connection. But here at the dinner, we realize like, oh, that's actually Kristen Stewart's brother-in-law. And so now we know for sure that he was cheating on his wife. They have some fun, almost like comedic, awkward silence between Jackie and JJ. You know, it's like, oh, this is super awkward. You know, this is really weird. But it gives us a good idea of what's coming here with her confronting JJ and just being like, if you touch her again, whatever. And then we learn, you know, that's why Lou is still there, is to protect her sister. And that all goes kind of awry, you know, in just a little bit.
just slightly.
Yeah.
Of course, after this, Jackie has a good sense of what is going on with Lou and with her situation, and realizing the consequences and the outcome of Lou being such a caring person to Beth and never moving on with her life. And that is why Lou is here still in a town ran essentially by her father, Lou Sr., played by Ed Harris, and his drug ring. Is it a drug ring? We're never really told explicitly.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, though, because don't we see like guns and stuff like that too? Like,
yeah,
it's probably a little bit into everything.
Yeah, he's definitely a little bit into everything, and that seeps into Lou's life. And so I think Jackie feels this and feels for Lou and wants the best. And Jackie's of this mindset where she is achieving her dream. She's going to Vegas. She's going to perform in a show. She's going to win. She is going to be the next best bodybuilder. And because of this, she then follows JJ home and essentially beats him to death and crushes his skull into a table. And it was fucking crazy, bro. It was insane. I had no clue we were going that direction, and I was shocked.
It was shocking. So yeah, I think they get called. Lou gets called to the hospital, right? Because the general character has just been severely beaten, and that's
like the entire left side of her face is like, basically like Jesse in Breaking Bad, where it's just purple and inflated, and you know that JJ in caused this.
Yeah, and she's not responding to anything. She's totally out. So yeah, we see Lou's frustration, and then that's where we see Jackie's like, okay, well, I'm gonna do something about this. But yeah, that scene, man, like the shot that we stick on where she's like smashing his head and we don't see anything at all. It's like, oh, this, they're gonna kind of subvert, you know, the violence or whatever.
No way.
Know, unlike Talk to Me, where we watched all this happen, you know, it's like, oh, we're not going to see it. And then instead we see the aftermath and it's just like almost worse. It's like, holy shit. Like, I think that's his jaw. That's like,
yeah,
on the ground.
Split in half.
Yeah.
Right?
It was kind of nuts. And then moving him around and watching that move, like it was, this just felt super, I guess. I mean, I feel like the word gets used too much sometimes, but very visceral. I felt it, you know, it's just like, it was intense.
This feels like the first time as well to me where Rose Glass is really smart about playing with the juxtaposition of height and camera angle with Jackie and with Katie O'Brien's character, because this happens. We get a very low to the ground angle upward toward Jackie, who in this moment feels like a giant monster.
Yeah.
And is that to us, the audience, and of course, is that to JJ? And she embodies the screen in that fashion. And that's not the last time that we see that. And I think that's really smart from Rose to deploy that when Jackie is feeling physically like large, like really in power and in control. Although she might have been a little out of control for this situation. Then Lou finds JJ and they wrap him up in a carpet, which you kind of mentioned is still kind of wild to watch, which is crazy. Wrap him up in a carpet. They put him in Lou's truck and drive him to this place that Lou knows. She doesn't say where it is. And it is this canyon. And they take JJ's car. They put him in it. And they push the car over the canyon and they throw Molotov cocktails down there and they burn it all. And Lou is essentially doing this twofold. One, to get rid of JJ's body, and two, to bring attention to this cavern, this crevice in which her father dumped other bodies throughout his time managing whatever ring and nefarious activity he has been. And so it kind of opens up the narrative to become then this familial revenge story while also being an on the run murder mystery with Jackie and Lou. I didn't know we were going this direction and I loved it.
I thought it was fantastic. I totally skipped it, but this is the very first shot of the movie is us coming out of this canyon, you know, with those red lights, like kind of on the walls of it. And it's like, oh, this is a beautiful shot. Also, what does this mean? And then we find out later on, like what this canyon is. Throughout the film, we get these flashbacks from Lou with her and her dad and just like this beautiful red light shot, you know, and then Lou shooting a guy in the head and them shoving him down the canyon. We get these like weird flashbacks that she has. And then, yes, we do this with the Molotov and sending him down there. And it's so interesting. Like you said, just like it takes a turn now where she's like, you know what? No, I'm going to answer for this. Yeah. My dad's going to answer for this. Like you can't get caught up in this kind of stuff. Like he's done too much bad stuff that you can't take the rap on this. So again, just like continuing their love story of like being on the run or whatever. And then, you know, Kristen Stewart spends the next day like cleaning up and doing all that kind of shit to cover for her, and the extent she goes to even with poor Daisy, you know, getting caught up in this stuff. Like, man, it just takes such a turn right here, but for the best.
Yeah. It does feel like a very, you know, a very like Bonnie and Clyde homage of, you know, okay, I'll do anything for you type situation, because you did this for me, and that must be your best form of love. And I'll take that and I'll receive that and I'll reciprocate that to you. Next on the list here, I have Jackie's Vegas show. Is this the weirdest part of the movie?
Yeah. I think so. The on stage, like the solo on stage stuff.
Yeah. So
it's definitely the weirdest part. Yeah.
So Jackie gets essentially addicted to these muscle enhancers. And I think it's brilliantly structured when she is withdrawing from them, because we understand voices are muffled, and we get this very disorienting kind of look around. Mm-hmm. And then we get a like hard cut to when she has injected and when she feels great. She's doing pushups, she's ready to go. And then she's on stage doing her kind of solo exhibition. Things start to go wild. She thinks about and sees visions of JJ and her murdering JJ. And then she begins to kind of vomit, but she vomits up a full-grown Kristen Stewart Lou, who is also covered in amniotic fluid, and says something to her. I was so disoriented by what was transpiring. I was not very focused. And then we cut to reality, and Jackie has vomited all over the stage, and she starts to attack some of the older bodybuilders that are mocking her. And Jackie has really fallen off the rails at this point in time. And we're like only maybe halfway through the movie, and things have taken a very dark trajectory for her character.
I was really wondering what was going to happen. Like, I don't know if we were getting into a men's situation where like people are just going to keep throwing up like these full size human beings.
And then Lou throws up a Lou senior, and then he's like kind of small.
I was like, oh shit, what is happening?
He throws
here?
Up a JJ, and he comes out with his weird stash.
This sequence, it's the weirdest part of it for me. And this is what I was talking about earlier, where like towards the end, it kind of went off the rails, where like, I don't know how much we needed the bodybuilding competition, you know, like, I don't know how much it added. I think could have just like had Jackie in the town, just like hiding out or something like that. I don't know. Like, it's fine. It just was like, okay, this is a weird left turn suddenly. Like, I know we talked about going to this competition, but the fact that she did it and then just goes back, it's like, it just felt, I don't know, it felt out of place for me for some reason. But it was weird, and I love that.
Well, she did do it against Lou's wishes. Lou essentially locked her in to try to protect her. She goes against Lou's wishes. I think this is a very interesting thing, and I actually think it's quite warranted, because it does show kind of two things for Jackie. One, obviously the guilt she feels from actioning on this thing that she has done, murdering JJ for Lou. And Lou really being the source of where she is at now and her kind of abolished dreams, because she could have had this competition. She could have been well off. And we know that, because we say that in the beginning, and she is a great bodybuilder. And her birthing Lou, or vomiting Lou? Which one do we think it is? Vomiting or birthing?
I mean, I have no idea. Honestly, I still don't know if I can wrap my head around the scene.
Her vomit birthing Lou proves the stranglehold that Lou has over her and her decision making, and that she really is at the core of this. And I find that really fascinating. I agree with you. I was worried for a second, because I was like, okay, this is weird. Like, where are we going to go for the next 40 minutes, guys? Come on. Like, we're peaking too early. What happens next proves that we didn't peak too early. Jackie is enlisted by Lou Sr. to go take care of it. And that would be to kill Daisy, the only witness to Lou and Jackie disposing of JJ's body. And then essentially killing Lou. I think that was part of it. Am I interpreting that correctly? Because she tries to fire the gun at Lou and it's empty and she says, oh fuck. And then she runs away and Lou is left managing, just a bloodied, dying Daisy on the floor of her apartment.
Yeah. I think that was the overall mission, was to take care of both of them. But she literally couldn't pull the trigger on it. But she took care of Daisy. That was a shocking scene too, where suddenly
all of a sudden
has blood on her face. I'm like, what is happening? Like, did Daisy just throw up or what was it, you know? And nope, she just got fucking blasted in the face, man. It was
no
nuts.
Big deal. Nah. Immediately after this, the FBI comes to Lou's house. She tries her best to dispose of Daisy, rolls her up a little bit into a rug, shoves her behind the couch. And as the FBI is sitting on her couch, her cat goes and licks up the pool of blood that is draining from Daisy's body, which I thought was hilarious. And the FBI is there and basically interrogates her. And then directly after this, she calls her dad and is like, I'm going to tell them everything. I'm going to do this. And it is full blown war. And Lou Sr. gets back and is like, bad decision, dude. And basically just like hangs up. And for me, that was like an all time high on the tension, because I was just like, both of these people have power. They've got people in their pockets and they can figure out dirty, nasty ways to get at each other. And based on what we've already seen, anything can fucking happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, without a doubt. Like, I think that's one of the best line deliveries of the movie too. Is as Kristen Stewart is telling Ed Harris's character, it's like, oh, I'm just going to tell them everything. Like, you're done, whatever. And he's like, this sounds like you're threatening me. And we just get like a long pause.
That was,
you know,
so
like,
good.
It was so good, right? You know,
yeah, she goes, yep. Yep. And I was like, fuck yeah.
And like, all right, cool. It is on right now. I thought that line delivery was perfect. Maybe one of the best parts of the whole movie for sure. So, I don't know. This was a great, great scene. And just like, again, like we're ramping up the tension.
Lou Sr. then captures Jackie, ties her up, and we're kind of on a straight shot to the final act and really the final 20 minutes of this film. Captures Jackie. This is where things get a little bit more intense. We get a little bit more flashbacks. We get some more of this red lit kind of entrancing narrative, and we don't really know where things are going. Lou goes to find Jackie at Lou Sr.'s house. So at her dad's house, which is like a mansion, by the way. Gorgeous house.
Yeah.
Incredible stuff. I guess drug money gets you anything you want. So good thing, good message, honestly. If you need some money, sell some drugs.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong there at all. And Lou sets Jackie free, and then Jackie runs away and essentially tries to start shooting her. And I think it's a really fascinating interrogation of like, what does love mean to these two people? Because it is so fucked up either way. And they both expect weird, dark, brutal things from each other that they misconstrue as love from time to time, because eventually Jackie cools off and it says, okay, how are we going to do this? Where are we going to go? Where am I going to go hide?
Yeah.
It is a very interesting scene to me. I don't know if it works all the way, but it's interesting.
Yeah, they bounce back really quickly. Which is kind
of interesting. That's my one call out. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Lou is having to explain why she was with Daisy, you know, and Jackie seeing that, it's like, well, it was because she was going to rat you out. Like, I did it for you kind of thing. They ran into that earlier where when Lou found out Jackie slept with JJ and having to explain that kind of stuff, like, it's just interesting things that have come up. But yeah, it felt like they just kind of like got over it quickly, but I guess they were also in a literal life and death situation there. So maybe it is like, okay, we can like talk about this later, but for now, this is fine. Let's just like get going. But yeah, that also was like one of the critiques I had about it.
Yeah, totally agree. Okay. We've got the two final scenes to talk about here. I wrote down Escape/Mega Jackie.
Yeah.
Wow. I have so many questions and I have so many thoughts that I want to talk about with this final scene. Lou is essentially captured at the hands of Lou Sr. and is getting ready to die. Jackie hulks out and literally turns into a physical giant. picks up Lou Sr., like King Kong, and it looks like she's going to tear his arms off.
I thought she was stoked.
Was going to get really fucking cool. She doesn't, unfortunately, but she offers Lou the opportunity to then basically stick a gun in Lou Sr.'s mouth and decide if she's going to kill him or not.
Yeah.
I want your thoughts on this scene, because I'm conflicted and I kind of want to process it a little bit. So I'm curious what you thought of it.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought the visuals were so interesting. Yeah, Jackie's running away. Here's Lou call for help. And then all of a sudden we just see her come back as this 50-foot tall woman, which is kind of rad.
Which was a great callback to what was on the television earlier in the film. I don't know if you caught that, but it was some kind of movie or television show in which there was a giant laying down, picking people up like they were little toothpicks. Oh, yeah.
Was that Gulliver's Travels or Gulliver's Island or something like
that? Yeah,
it might have been
the original. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, I didn't clock that. That's wonderful. Yeah, I think that indeed. Look at us.
What do you know? Look at us.
Yeah, I took it, though, not as a literal thing. I took it as just... metaphorically, she was this huge giant that came and saved the day. Because I do think even in her regular state, she could have held down Lou Sr. like that. Because, dude's pushing 70 at least or whatever. But I just took it as more of the metaphorical thing. And I took that throughout the whole movie. Because every time, when Jackie kind of like hulked out a little bit, it was like in response to an emotion, oftentimes brought on by Lou. So just like, it just felt like, oh, this is driving me crazy, or this is like making me feel extra passionate, whatever it is. And then this was just like, it just like coming out in its full strength here. But to me, it was just the metaphor of just like her coming to save the day. But I thought it was really cool. And then they're both giants and running away and stuff. And I thought that was rad.
Yes. Quick sidebar. I have a poster for The Abyss, the special 4K re-release that I'm looking at off to the side of the camera that has Ed Harris's face really big on it. So it's really disorienting looking at that and then talking about Ed Harris as Lou Sr. in this film. Shout out to Ed Harris. Just a fucking journeyman. Being in fucking awesome stuff for 40 years, man. Crazy. Okay. This scene, much like you, I took it metaphorically. I kind of took it as, and I haven't heard anybody say this, so I might be a fool. I might be really outing myself as a dummy here. But Jackie turns into a giant essentially as soon as it seems that Lou Sr. has decided he will pull the trigger on Lou and leave her there, escape by himself, and free himself of the troubles that they have brought upon him. I took that as basically a cut to Lou was killed and Lou died. And in this past or in this life that she is now living in this moving on stage, this is what she would have wanted to happen. She views Jackie as this physically large savior that can come and, much like you said, solve their problems and come and be the savior against Lou Sr. And they can be giants together and they can run away together and they can both feel the wind in their hair and they can be free together, but only in a dream, only in a world in which that will be her idealistic future with Jackie, because Lou Sr. did go through with it and did pull the trigger and did escape. And this is just what would have happened, what Lou would have liked to have seen happen.
I mean, that's super interesting. I never would have had that read on it. I think I just took it more as straightforward as you can take a 50-foot tall woman. Like, I just like took it for what it was, ended up getting away, which was good. But I think that's an interesting read on it for sure.
Thanks. That was a really polite way of being like, you're a dumb fuck and you really don't,
no, not at
don't
all.
Know what you're like, talking about.
I'm the one who didn't read it that way. It's like, that's super interesting. Yeah.
Obviously, I think you go both ways. I think it is one big metaphor for Lou's love and hopefulness of the power that Jackie can instill in her life and can get her out of this cycle of Lou Sr. And maybe it is talking a little bit to the fact that Jackie might view that relationship as like a chip in this game to escape what she's been enraptured in for so long. And then Jackie can offer that freedom. The very ending, we get the credits, and during the credits, they're both driving away. Daisy is in the back of the truck. She starts to kind of move and wiggle a little bit, which, again, I feel like lines up with my read a little bit, because she's fucking dead. She's been dead. She was shot in the head. So I find that suspicious that she's like moving around and starting to wiggle. And Lou drags her out in the desert as Jackie remains in the car, not really watching. Great split diopter shot here, which is really brilliant. And she brings Daisy out and she steals the cigarettes out of her pocket and lights up a cigarette, because Lou has been, much like you said, trying to stop smoking throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
That says something. I don't quite know what the read on that is. I need to revisit it, but I think there's a lot to unpack. I don't know if the credit scene works for me.
Okay.
I'm conflicted.
I mean, it's totally fair. I thought it was interesting. It was kind of, I don't know if humorous is the right word, but the fact that she wasn't dead and she's like, all right, I just have to like choke you out now. Which is kind of, because I had that same thought too. It's like, man, you've been passed out then for a very long time if you're not dead. Like, I know we only saw a hole like in her cheek and we didn't see it like go through her skull or anything like that. But still, that's just like, that's a lot to live through. So I don't know. But I did like Lou just like watching her just like drag Daisy in the desert while Jackie's just like passed out in the front seat. And it's just like, yeah, Lou's just like, sometimes she's gonna have to handle this shit on her own, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. But
I don't know. It was an interesting ending. I may have liked it more if it had just ended after the two, like their giants running away together. You know, like that could have been a really interesting ending.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think the additional credit scene adds that layer of complexity, and I think it does make it more questionable as to what really transpired. Like, did we really Bonnie and Clyde this shit? Like, did we get away? Did we do it? Because we're just choking somebody out in the middle of the desert in the middle of the day when anybody can drive by now. And maybe that's commentary on the power and the invincibility that both of them feel when they're around each other and what they have managed to get through in such a short amount of time. I think there's a lot to unpack for the movie. I think it's telling that we want to unpack so much and that we have been talking about it for almost an hour. That's crazy. I think that's really good for this film. I think my favorite moment, if it's not Mega Jackie just for like the intrigue, it is the birth vomit of Lou. Strictly disorienting as shit scene that is, I don't know, it really out of the mind of someone special.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't know if it's my true cinema moment, but that bathroom scene, man, I know we kind of hit it before the spoilers, but that was just like, man, it was so intimate. It was so intense.
So
I was like,
intimate.
Oh, we're just like sitting here with them as they're doing this. Like, this is kind of crazy. There's another scene I just wanted to talk about very briefly. I thought it just felt like we were almost invading on their space or something like that. Like, oh shit. Okay. This is super like personal and feral shit. I mean, as far as my true cinema, I think it might have to be Mega Jackie. I just liked her. I honestly kind of wish he had ripped apart Ed Harris. Like, that would have been really kind of cool. But I enjoyed
just
the
like
visuals
plucked
of that.
His arms off. That
yeah, even just
sick.
One arm. You know what I mean? Like, he can live through that. Like, yeah.
Right. Exactly. Just have him bleed out a little bit. Pull a Daisy. He'll be fine. Yeah. That would have been cool. I agree with you, though. I think we didn't talk about the sex scenes too much, but they are what hold this narrative together, in my opinion, and they are so intimate, so well constructed, so smartly used that it does feel almost invasive that we're part of this relationship with Jackie and Lou, and it does feel like there is this pent up excitement, opportunity, energy that both of them are taking advantage of, and it continues to escalate. And it escalates in times when you don't necessarily think so. So I think like the bathroom scene just happens. Like Lou just goes into the bathroom and is like, show me how you touch yourself. And it's like, whoa, okay, wow. We are going there right now. And this is their relationship. And I think it is very, very powerful. Okay. A1 act. We're going with Kristen Stewart. I don't think we've ever done Kristen Stewart here in the pod before.
I don't think we have.
Because I don't think she's been in a 24 movie before? Question mark? I don't think so. I don't think so. Okay, here's what we've got. We got Panic Room, Zathura, Into the Wild, Jumper. Were you in a Jumper?
Pretty good. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Jumper? Hayden Christensen?
Yeah, and I'm aware. Yeah.
The ultimate superpower. If anybody ever asked me what superpower I want, I'm always like, I want to jump because then I could just go anywhere all the time. Better than teleportation. Is it a good movie? I don't know. I haven't seen it in 20 years. The Twilight films, of course. Adventureland, The Runaways, Snow White and the Huntsman, On the Road, Still Alice, American Ultra, Certain Women, Personal Shopper, Charlie's Angels, Happiest Season, Spencer, Crimes of the Future, and Love Lies Bleeding. That is our Kristen Stewart shortlist.
Nice. I like it.
Some really good stuff on there.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Are you a Twilight guy?
I've only seen the first one.
Okay, all right. I think I've seen them all, but I don't remember. I mean, they got our bats, so I had to be there, you know.
Yeah, that's your Batman. I get it.
It is my Batman.
For me, I'm going to go with The Runaways.
Okay.
Cool story about Joan Jett and the Runaways, you know, as they're coming up. Great cast, Kristen Stewart, Dakota Fanning, Michael Shannon, Aaliyah Shawkat, and then our A24 queen, Riley Keough, is in there as well.
Nice.
So, yeah, super fun movie. I like a biopic. I like a period piece biopic. We get all the Runaways music. So, yeah, I just don't feel like people talk about it enough. So that's what I'm going to pick.
Okay, cool. I love it. I just added it to my watch list. So that proves that people don't talk about it enough. It wasn't even on my watch list. I'm going to go with, I know we both talked about how stellar she is in this film, so let's not forget about that. But I am going to try to mix it up. I like her in Happy Season. I actually think she's pretty good, but I'm going to go with Crimes of the Future. I mentioned that in the beginning. She is so good for the limited screen time that she has in Crimes of the Future. I was so interested in her character. I wanted to know so much more. And I walked out of Love Lies Bleeding being like, I'm going to fire up Crimes of the Future. Like, I just need this, like, modality of Kristen Stewart just like operating on that level in weird movies. And I think she's really quite good in that movie. A movie that I wasn't super high on when I first watched it, but the more I think about it, the more I enjoy it, and I would like to revisit it. Another film that is built around you know, strange sexual dependencies.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. A24 ranking. We haven't done one of these in quite a long time.
It's been a minute.
What are you feeling?
I think I'm feeling a solid B24.
Mm. Okay.
I think that's how I feel about it. Like, with room to be a B+ on a rewatch, but a B right now.
That sounds pretty good. I agree with you, actually. I am going to go with the B24 as well. I agree. It could be a B+ on a rewatch. Can't wait to rewatch this film. I think it's really good. I think it's got some interesting talking points. We mentioned the things that maybe don't work for us, but I think it says a lot and there's a lot to unpack there. And it's a really well executed film at what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
And I had a great time. I had a great time with Love Lies Bleeding.
Well, I think that's a solid rating from both of us. I don't know. I'm excited for a rewatch for sure.
Yeah, definitely agree. Okay, next week on the pod. Wait, do you have any closing thoughts? Love Lies Bleeding they didn't get to say?
No, nothing that I won't relate back to it being better than Maestro. So we can just skip it.
We can just move right on. Okay, great. Yeah. Wonderful. Next week on the pod, Problemista, another new A24 flick, one that was originally supposed to come out a while ago, it seems, and then ended up getting pushed and is now coming out nationwide. Julio Torres and Tilda Swinton in this film. I don't know a whole lot about it. I'm trying to go in a little bit blind. Letterboxd just released their like top rated movies of 2024 today on Twitter and socials. And this is like number 4. So I'm just going to put that out there. Okay. It's very high.
I like that. All right. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Tilda Swinton can do no wrong. You know, Michael Clayton, let's go.
This is true. Yeah. Shout out to Michael Clayton's squad. What a great flick.
Oh, Greta Lee's in it. The Riz is in it. Like, it's a good cast. All right. Cool.
Wow. Okay. Exciting. Right. Yeah. Super excited. So seek out Problemista if you want to see it when we talk about it. I'm sure it's out there. Yeah. Good pod, man. Good chat and Love Lies Bleeding.
This was fun to get back to A24 movies.
Yes.
Did Oscars for so long and then did like a recap of all the news. So it's fun. I feel like it's been a minute since we just sat here and talked about an A24 movie. I like it.
It feels nice. I like it too.
We should do this on a weekly basis, I think.
Let's do that. I think Fridays sound good. We should talk about them on Fridays.
I'm into it. hopefully you guys are into it as well. Let us know what your thoughts are on Love Lies Bleeding. We are on Twitter and Instagram at 24 minutes of A24. You can also watch our beautiful faces on YouTube, talk about these movies, so subscribe and hit the bell, all that kind of stuff. We thank you so much for the support. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. Spring break forever, bitches.